Since March 2007, one online audio production group has pushed the boundaries.
Broken Sea Audio Productions presents Maudlin.
It's Sounding Board. Audio drama with Lumpy Bits.
You have been listening to Jake Sanson.
Broken Sea Audio Productions presents
My name is Feedback, and these are my stories.
Last time on Gaia's Voyages.
This is the Broken Sea Audio production of Escape from New York.
OTR Swag Cast.
Doctor Who, starring Mark Telita as the Doctor.
BrokenSea.com, new audio every Thursday.
And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production, OTR Swag Cast.
Alright, we're going to have a Detective Thursday on the Swag Cast tonight. One of my favorite magazines that my dad has let me read over the years was the Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine, which was just cool, always new mysteries and stuff. Well, the popularity of the Ellery Queen novel series and the magazine led to the radio and TV series. And The Adventures of Ellery Queen was the title of a radio series and four separate television series made from the 1950s through the 1970s. They were based on the fictional character and the pseudonym writer Ellery Queen. And tonight we have a couple episodes from the radio series. Utterly fantastic and a lot of fun. Hope you enjoy. Holler at you later.
Now, Ellery Queen in The Adventure of the Message in Red. Because it relieves headache pain so fast.
Take an Anacin.
Because it gives prolonged relief.
Take an Anacin.
Because it's made like a doctor's prescription.
Take an Anacin.
Anacin presents The Adventures of Ellery Queen. Tonight, the makers of Anacin bring you another thrilling adventure of Ellery Queen, the celebrated gentleman detective. Ellery Queen invites you to match wits with him as he relates another story of a crime he alone unraveled. Before revealing the solution, he gives you a chance to solve the mystery. Tonight, Anacin's guest, who will represent you home armchair detectives, is the famous actor Victor Jory. And now, here's Ellery Queen, master detective, your Anacin host for the next half hour.
Thank you, Don Hancock, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, tonight's mystery really had my father going.
Your father, huh?
Oh, Nicky.
I suppose all those murders were duck soup for you, huh?
Oh, no, 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 Nicky, this case was no harder than many I've had. Anyway, I call it The Adventure of the Message in Red.
Hotel Arbutus, public stenographer. Yes, I'm Miss Kirby. At this hour? But... all right. If you drop into my office right away, I'll try to get it out tonight. Oh, why can't they just take their old business letters during the day? Oh, gee, I'm tired. I'd better douse my eyes with cold water. I'm so sleepy I could... so soon... Coming. Gee, they must have used a house phone from the lobby. Come in, won't you?
Hooray, hooray, in Dixieland.
Now, who's there? nobody out here. Oh. Now, who'd be using that talky thing from the vestibule? Nobody does. Yes? Yes, this Miss Hazel? What, at this time of night? I was just going to bed. Been washing my supper dishes. All right. If they've just got to have a reader's report on it by tomorrow morning, just open the vestibule door, and my apartment's the first door on your right. Would be my luck if it's one of those half a million word jobs. Just a second. Oh, I wish I were in the land of cotton. Old times there are not...
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's all you've got to tell me, Pinkett? Call him back when you make sense. Sorry, Eddie, to keep you and Icky waiting.
Those two killings last night, Dad, huh?
Yes. Lasted.
What two killings, Inspector? I haven't seen today's paper.
Two girls, Nicky. First one, a public standard with the Hotel Arbutus on Lexington Avenue. Shot to death at 9:15 p.m. Name of Kirby.
Second one, a part-time manuscript reader for Mason and Morris and the publishers, a Miss Hazel. Shot to death around 10:30 p.m. in our Greenwich Village apartment.
Both as they opened their doors. No evidence of robbery. Both unmarried, unattractive, no entangling alliances. Lived alone. No witnesses, no clues, no motive. And the girls never knew each other. Never knew any of the same people. Cute?
Then the murders aren't connected, Inspector.
But they are, Nicky. Ballistics reports the same gun killed both of them.
I don't wonder you're puzzled.
I think it's a nut kill myself, Ellery. Yes, Billy?
Afternoon, Sergeant.
Hi, Miss Porter. My job.
Hello, Sergeant.
Inspector. Know what?
No. What?
Another one.
No.
Huh?
Yeah, a girl shot to death. She answered her door around 1 a.m. last night. Body wasn't found till this morning.
Ooh, number three last night.
Who's this one, Billy?
Lady's maid, Lucille Dubois.
Dubois, Sergeant, French.
Yeah, French maid. Worked for the Canellas.
Canella? The, Vetti Canella?
The same.
She was shot in the Canella house, Sergeant.
Yeah, that 199-room shack on Upper Fifth Avenue, in her bedroom.
A stenographer, a publisher's reader, and a lady's maid. Mind if I sit in, Dad?
You can make any sense out of it, son. Come on.
Oh, my poor, poor head. My home overrun with police officers. I've had to cancel the most important appointment this afternoon with my hairdresser.
And Mrs. Canella, if you let me get away...
My husband is simply furious. My daughter, poor child, frustrated.
Look, Mrs. Canella...
And I'm on the verge of losing what little mind I have.
Mrs. Canella...
You understand, Mr. Crean. I know you do.
The death of your maid has upset you, naturally.
Oh, yes. Where am I going to turn? How can I replace Lucille? You don't know the trouble I had getting her originally. And now she's dead. It's not fair. It isn't.
The trouble is, gentlemen, you don't know the problems we girls have.
Look, madam, how did this happen?
I'm sure I don't know. People shooting off guns in my home and everything. I'm so glad I wasn't home when it happened, even though the house is completely soundproof.
Your husband, will you, madam?
Mr. Canet? Oh, no, he was out somewhere. His club or something.
How about your daughter?
Madge. Oh, now, please, don't drag poor Madge into this. She suffered so much already.
When did you first learn your maid was dead, Mrs. Canella?
About 11 o'clock this morning, Mr. Creighton. When she didn't bring my breakfast in bed, I knew instantly something was wrong.
Well, of course. That's the way you tell.
Oh, yes. I rang and I rang and I rang.
Mrs. Canella, who found the stiff?
Stiff?
The remains, madam.
Why, my daughter. One of the servants told Madge that Lucille's light was still on this morning, and she didn't answer the door. So Madge went up to the servants' quarters and went in, and the poor child. That's why no one answered my rings, you see.
Leaving you without breakfast. Oh, that's simply frightful,
oh, yes,
Miss Canella. Yes. Well, suppose you have a little snack of caviar and cold pheasant or something while we hunt up your dog.
Oh, dear. Must you?
Must we what, madam?
Give Madge the third degree or whatever it is. You don't know how sensitive the child is. She's always been so delicate. She shrinks so from the more brutal aspects of life.
Oh, Mother, stop drooling.
Madge, darling, are you all right, dear?
Definitely not. I'll be some more policemen. Who's the wench, your sob-sister?
The wench is Nicky Porter, Mr. Queen's secretary.
Ellery Queen.
Sergeant Verley.
Inspector Queen. Now, Miss Canella.
And you're in charge. Why isn't that body taken away, and who's going to clean up the mess? And you're to keep reporters out, too, do you hear? Thing like this happening now. Do you hear me? No, newspaper men.
Oh, dearest, don't excite yourself.
Oh, shut up, Mother. All this is your silly fault anyway.
My fault?
Yes, I told you long ago you should send that snoop packing, but no, you had to hang on to it till she had the bad taste to get herself murdered all over our house. What am I going to say to Evie?
Evie?
My fiancé. Least our engagement was supposed to be announced this week. One of the very best Boston families. He'll never stand for a scandal.
Why should you think there's going to be a scandal, Miss Canella?
Oh, well, isn't a murder scandal enough?
I don't think that's what your daughter meant, Mrs. Canella. Yeah?
Nothing. Nothing at all. I didn't mean anything.
Let's take a look at the corpse.
Interesting.
What, Ellie?
Notice the facing surfaces of the tips of her index and middle fingers, Dad, on the right hand.
Huh. Well, calloused. Only place for calluses.
Yes.
If you gentlemen are through admiring Miss Dubois' calluses, would you mind covering up again so I can turn around?
Hmm? Oh. All right now, Nicky.
But how do you know this maid's murder is connected with the other two murders?
Bradley was here early and dug the bullet out of her chest, Nicky. Ballistics just reported it came the same gun that shot the Kirby and Hazel girls. Just what the connection is, I'm blessed. Oh, Veely?
Yeah, you throw the corpus inspector the morgue wagon's here for the pickup.
Take her away.
She's all yours, boy.
What did you find out about the other servants, Sergeant?
Names? Butler James Smathers, cook Sally Fabian, chauffeur Waller Boyle. Upstairs maid Vera Andorf. Smathers and Boyle share a double room, so do the Fabian and Andorf woman. Each bunkie alibis the other for last night. Period.
Mother, you know you shouldn't be up here. Just your morbid curiosity.
Oh, I don't know why you say such things to me, Madge, baby. Oh, look what they're doing.
Stay out here in the hall, Margaret. You too, Madge.
Inspector Queen.
Who are you?
I'm Milford Canella. My wife just phoned my club. Is there anything I can do?
Excuse me, folks. Okay, boys, take her through.
Oh, Madge, I can't look. Oh, poor Lucy.
Be yourself, Mother.
Well, Mr. Canella, we were just... Pardon me. Harry, what's that you just picked up?
Oh, well, this piece of scrap paper was hidden by Lucille Dubois' body, Dad.
A message in red. Red?
Message? Let me see.
In red? Is it? Oh, it is.
Written in blood.
She must have fingered a few minutes after the shot. When that killer left, she tried to write something before she died.
What's it say, Ellery?
Starts with a capital M, but there are a lot of spatters in the paper, and I can't quite make the rest out.
I'll have Cranny look it over in the police lab. He'll decipher it. Give it to me, son.
Right, it's quite important that you make a quick arrest, Inspector.
What's that mean, Mr. Canella?
I expect very shortly to be appointed to an extremely important diplomatic post abroad. So this unfortunate little affair must be cleared up at once. And without scandal.
Milford has worked so hard for the honor.
Yes, it's been Father's pet dream.
In fact, Inspector, unless you solve this case within 24 hours, I may have to see to it that someone else is put in charge. Come, Margaret.
Mad?
And Father's just a little guy who can do it.
Dad. Harry, where are you going?
I have to confirm a theory, Dad.
Theory? About what, son?
About the connection between the three murders last night. I think I know now what it was. Anybody care to come along?
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the beginning of our mystery. We'll tell you more in just a moment, but first, here's Don Hancock for Aniston.
Friends, if you want quick, comforting relief from pounding headache pain...
Take an Aniston.
Yes, take an Aniston, because Aniston relieves headache pain so swiftly. Millions now know that easy-to-take Aniston tablets act fast, give prolonged relief. And that's why we say...
Take an Aniston.
There's a good reason why Aniston relieves the agonizing pain of headaches so much more quickly. Aniston is made like a doctor's prescription. That is, it contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven active ingredients. Your own physician or dentist may have already recommended Aniston to you. That's how millions first discovered Aniston's incredibly fast relief. And now, at the first sign of the pains of headache, neuralgia, or neuritis, they simply...
take an Anacin.
Anacin, spelled A-N-A-C-I-N, is sold at all druggists. So if you want fast, prolonged relief from headache pain...
take an Anacin.
And now, back to our story. It's a short time later, and the inspector's car, with Sergeant Feely at the wheel, is threading its way through Midtown Manhattan traffic.
But what is the connection, Ellery?
Well, how'd you know, Marshal?
Well, what was the occupation of the first victim, the Kirby girl?
Published in Abbott.
And the second one, Miss Hazel?
The Greenwich Village gal?
Oh, she was a part-time manuscript reader for Mason and Morrison.
A public stenographer, a publisher's reader. Now, Dad, do you recall the peculiar calluses we found on Lucille Dubois' right hand?
And the facing sides of the tips of her index and middle fingers.
What very ordinary activity, if sufficiently prolonged, would cause calluses there?
Holding a pen or a pencil.
Yes, Nicky, writing. But not casual writing, like the occasional writing of letters. Lucille Dubois was writing a great deal for a long time. Weeks, months.
A diary.
Perhaps, at least a very extensive manuscript in longhand, Sergeant. So, we have Lucille Dubois, lady's maid in a very wealthy society family, writing a long manuscript by hand. When it was finished, what would happen to such a manuscript?
You take it to a public stenographer.
To be typed.
Surely, the unfortunate Miss Kirby. And where do people usually take type manuscripts?
To a publisher.
And most publishers employ readers to weed out undesirable submissions. And that's your Miss Hazel of the Village. Simple?
Maestro, you're a genius.
The men at Gare's are probably the only three people in the world who've read a certain unpublished manuscript.
And that's why they were murdered.
Man, it must be dynamite. The killer must have swiped it, probably from the Hazel girl's apartment in the Village after he bumped her off.
And destroyed it, Kenny.
Yes, but there's still a possibility that something...
Well, might... here we are, Maestro.
Here's Rockefeller Center. Come on.
I must say, Mason and Morrison go in for book publishing in a large and handsome way, Ellery.
They're a bit on the sensational side, Nicky. Miss Jenkins?
Yes, Alberta Jenkins.
Are you the assistant editor my son spoke to on the receptionist phone?
Yes, and you must be Inspector Queen.
That's right.
I must say I'm all of a flutter. Am I arrested?
Not exactly, Miss Jenkins. Did you bring the list I asked you for?
Here it is. All the manuscripts turned over to Miss Hazel the past few months for a reader's report.
Let me see, Ellery.
Say, she read a lot, didn't she?
It'll be quite recent, I think. Ah, look at this entry, Dad.
Maid tells all. By Lucille Dubois.
Wow!
Miss Jenkins, where's this manuscript? Are you sure Miss Hazel didn't return it to Mason and Morrison?
I'm pretty sure she didn't inspect it, but come into my office. No, it isn't here.
Oh, no.
But I just remembered. Where is that again?
Remembered what, Miss Jenkins?
There was a letter from Miss Hazel in this morning's mail. I've been so busy today, here it is. Still unopened.
Gemma, give that to me, baby.
Well.
Dear Miss Jenkins, enclosed is a short preliminary report on three of the last batch of manuscripts.
I will personally deliver the manuscripts plus full reports later this week. The enclosed thumbnail reports cover number one...
Give Back My Lover by Flo Gently.
Phooey.
Romance in a phone booth, my Georgette bag. Wow.
And The Maid Tells All by Lucille Dubois.
No.
Miss Jenkins, would you mind leaving us for a moment?
I certainly do mind, Mr. Queen, but... well...
where's that report the Hazel woman enclosed? Here.
Now we'll find out.
Maid Tells All. Sensational true life story of high life as seen from backstairs. Stylus faulty. Author obviously thinks in French, but might be worth a rewrite. Possibly high sales appeal, but must be screened carefully by legal departments against libel suits. That's all.
Maid's manuscripts filled a lot of nasty, unsuspected stuff about the Canellas that would have cost Milford Canella that high diplomatic post he's been angling for.
Or Madge Canella, her blue-blood Boston marriage.
Yeah, somehow the killer discovered what Lucille was writing, who typed her manuscript, and the name of the publisher she sent it to.
And through the publisher, which reader had it.
So he's got to wipe out whoever read it. Steno, wham. Reader, wham. And he swipes the manuscript from her apartment. Then he goes back to the Canella dump and blasts Lucille in the secret society.
Too safe, blasted. I thought we might find a clue here to the killer's identity. But apparently the whole Canella family has motive.
I mean, let's go down to headquarters. Maybe the autopsy's turned up something.
Don't drive so fast, Sergeant. You just passed a snail.
There's nothing to rush for, Miss Porter.
Look it down and see some daylight.
In this darkness, Inspector? Oh, at least I'm enjoying this ride on the East River Drive. Or I would be if the great man's thoughts weren't.
Of course.
Oh, Mr. Queen is with us again.
Why then that?
The answer, Dad. It's right in your pocket.
What answer?
To the triple header, Maestro.
My pocket.
I forgot. You forgot. We all forgot, Dad. A certain message in red.
Holy. That dang message Lucille wrote in her own blood.
Say.
The one we couldn't decipher.
How'd I put it? Here. What's the matter with
Come
me?
On.
Feely, get down to headquarters, quick.
Yeah, man. If anybody can make it out, it's that whizzing lab men we're in. Sailing
over the mountain. Sure,
beat it up.
Huh?
What's eating you now, Sam?
A car right in our trail coming up fast.
Some drunk wants a race.
With a police car out.
Billy, he's out to wreck us.
Oh, yeah?
Keep going, faster.
Look out, Sergeant.
Why, the driver. He's got
it. No, not with Mickey in the car.
Don't mind me.
He's gaining.
I could only spot the driver. It's too dark.
Billy!
Watch it! Look out!
Tell me, I'm in one piece.
Sorry. I'm okay, too. Inspector.
No bones broken, Billy. Ellie.
By a miracle, we're all right. Oh, Billy, that was quick thinking.
Certainly was.
Well, if it weren't for the way you took that crash, Sergeant, we've been through the retaining wall at the bottom of the river.
Thanks, but look at the car, Inspector.
Never mind the car. Why?
Dad, Lucille's message.
Huh?
All three Canellas were present when I found it under Lucille's body this afternoon.
One of them must have trailed us.
Waiting a chance to destroy Lucille's clue before we could get it to headquarters.
Then the killer is one of the Canellas. And her message tells which one.
Hey, the car, Billy. Let's get to that lab.
Sergeant!
Well, Billy?
What's the lab verdict?
Well, it's this way.
Sergeant.
No good.
Kinda looks like a puzzler, Inspector.
Never mind characterizing it, Billy. What did they say the message is?
It starts with a capital M, Maestro, like you said, then a period.
M period, yes?
Then a space, then a capital K, then a small I N, the N trailing off like she died before she could finish the word. And that's all.
Capital M period, space. Capital K, small I-N.
Capital K, small I-N. The start of the name Canella.
No doubt about it, Nicky.
But what's the capital M period space mean?
Last name Canella. M period must be the initial of one of the Canella's first names.
Milford Canella. M for Milford.
Well, the daughter's name also starts with an M, Nicky. Madge.
Well, then it's either Madge or old man.
Let's not leave out Mrs. Canella. Don't you recall Canella addressing his wife as Margaret?
Frost. Another washout. Again, it could be any of the three. Let's go back to the Canella house. I'll find out which one it is. Good evening.
Oh, dear. Back Inspector Man again.
And that nice Mr. Queen, etc.
Well, Inspector, have you cleared up this mess?
Where were you three late this afternoon and early evening? Where were you?
I needed air. I was strolling in Central Park.
Alone, Mrs. Canella?
Why, yes.
How about you, Mr. Canella?
Well, as a matter of fact, I took a walk myself down Fifth Avenue. Very upsetting business, you know.
Meet anybody you know, Mr. Canella?
No.
And you, Miss Canella?
I took one of our cars and drove around town for a while just to cool off. I'd had a phone call from dear Evie in Boston.
My daughter's fiancé told her they'd better wait about announcing the engagement until this miserable affair blows over.
I knew it. I just knew it.
Aren't we getting off the track?
No alibis.
Well, Ellery, anything to ask these three people before I take them downtown for a real going over?
No, but why do you want to take them to headquarters, Dad?
Why do I? To find out which one of them bumped off the Kirby and Hazel girls and Mrs. Cannella's maid. That's why.
Oh, I can tell you that, Dad. Right here and now. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the mystery. Now, suppose you home armchair detectives match wits with Aniston's guest for this evening.
And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, our guest, the famous actor of stage, screen, and radio, is Mr. Victor Jory, who is starring on Broadway in the hit play, Therese.
Good evening, Mr. Jory. It's nice to have you with us. Well, Mr. Jory, I guess tonight's show is a change for you, isn't it?
It certainly is. Because generally I'm on the other end. I'm the person who's done the murdering, Ellery.
Well, you always are the criminal, but you're always so wonderful, too.
Well, thank you, Nicky. I hope you like me just as well in the role of detective.
Sure. Well, Mr. Jory, who do you think murdered the three women?
Well, I'm not very sure. I think it was the mother, Margaret Cannella.
Why do you think that?
My only reason for thinking that is because the Milford Cannella, suspicion is planted on him instantly by the fact that he says that he has a very important post and it's very valuable to him. The daughter backs that up. The mother has said nothing. Furthermore, the mother's alibi, being in Central Park, seems to me one that could be shaken less easily than the man who walked down Fifth Avenue, which might be checked on, or the girl in the car, because the car could be checked on afterwards.
Thank you, Mr. Jory. You'll find out in just a moment if your solution is correct. Now, here's Don Hancock for Aniston.
Today, millions are switching to Aniston. For Aniston is the modern way to relieve headache suffering. There's nothing to fuss with, nothing to mix or spill. Just easy to take little tablets that you carry right in your pocket or purse. And Aniston is the fast way to prolonged relief. Prove it. Next time you have a headache,
take an Aniston.
Aniston must give you fast, prolonged relief or your money back. I'll repeat that. If you're not thoroughly satisfied that Aniston does much more for your headache pain, simply return the unused portion and your money will be refunded. So tomorrow, ask your druggist for the small, inexpensive package containing 12 Aniston tablets. Take only as directed. If pain persists or is unusually severe, see your physician. Remember, there's only one Aniston. Don't be satisfied with anything less. Next time you have a headache pain,
take an Aniston.
But how, Maestro?
Time! All right, son. You know which of these respectable citizens killed the three girls? Sing out.
Dad, what was the message Lucille Dubois left in her own blood?
Start of a killer's name. Capital M period, space, capital K-I-N for Cannella.
Yes. But what did the capital M period stand for?
Well, it could only mean the initial of one of the Cannella's first names, Ellery.
How can it possibly represent one of the first names, Nicky? Milford, Madge, Margaret, all M's. If Lucille had presence of mind enough to write that message, certainly she wouldn't have left an ambiguous clue. A clue that could refer to any of the Cannellas. So, when she wrote that capital M period, she didn't mean the initial of one of their first names. She meant some other abbreviation. One she thought would be perfectly clear.
But what, Maestro?
Well, Sergeant, what abbreviation, other than a first initial, usually precedes a last name?
Huh?
Abbreviation for Mr., Mrs., or Miss? Oh, no, that would be M.R., M.R.S., Miss has no abbreviation.
Oh, so it can't be that either, Ellery.
It can't stand for Mr., Mrs., or Miss in English. But how about French?
French?
What?
Mrs. Cannella's maid was French. And that reader's report in her book actually remarked that the author obviously thinks in French. What's the French abbreviation for Mrs.? Well, any schoolboy knows that. Capital M, small M-E for Madam. Miss, capital M, small L-L-E for Mademoiselle. But for Mr., Monsieur, it's simply capital M, period.
Not get him, Billy! Yet, I'll see you all sizzle for this!
Oh, yeah! I disagree, Mr. Cannella. If anyone's going to sizzle, It's you.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to our mystery. We'd like to thank Mr. Jory for being our guest armchair detective this evening. And as mementos of the occasion, Anison has for Mr. Jory a beautiful Gruen, very thin wristwatch, a copy of my new mystery anthology, Rogue's Gallery, and a subscription to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine.
Ellery will be back in a moment with a preview of next week's story. Meanwhile, remember, because it relieves headache pain so fast...
take an Anison.
Because it gives prolonged relief...
take an Anison.
Because it's made like a doctor's prescription...
take an Anison.
There's only one Anison. Get Anison tomorrow. And now, Ellery, how about next week's case? Got another mystery with three or four murders?
No, Don, only one murder next week. But it's one of the most confusing to come our way in a long time.
A tough one, huh?
Yes, we had so much evidence we didn't know what to do with it. Not to mention the problem of the bending corpse.
The bending corpse?
Looks like that, did it, Don? Now you'll have to wait till next week when Anison presents The Adventure of a Happy Marriage. This is Ellery Queen saying good night for Anison.
Anison is a product of the Whitehall Pharmacal Company. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From London, we present Orbit 10, a play in 6 episodes by Peter Elliott Hayes. Episode 5, The Frozen World.
Tom Lambert here again. A strange cylinder buried beneath a northern... causing solid matter to vanish from the face of the earth. Possibly even transmitting it across the vastnesses of space. In the 4th recording, you heard how Elizabeth returned alone to the laboratory. How the cylinder began to operate with a new intensity. Now, we were very near to understanding the whole unbelievable truth. Here is the 5th recording.
If I had known that night the terrible risk Elizabeth had taken, but I was a mile away, sitting by my study fire with McCarran. Clifford knew, though. He could see the writhing mist, the white fur of frost smothering everything, the telephone swinging mutely on its cord, but not Elizabeth Ryder.
Liz, are you in there? Liz, for heaven's sake, can you hear me? Got to get these doors open.
Clifford moved across the passage and hurled himself bodily at the doors. They burst in, sending something rasping across the floor, a filing cabinet that had toppled across them on the inside. Dreadful, paralyzing cold closed about him. This was nothing we had seen before. The whole laboratory was an arctic landscape. The apparatus, the benches, no more than humped shapes beneath the coating of ice. Grotesque, glittering icebergs. The densolite cubicle had become a nightmare refrigerator. A hollow case of ice containing the only thing unchanged. The rod. Its green flickering growing duller each second. Clifford tottered and fell heavily. The floor itself was a gleaming sheet of ice. He dragged himself up. And then he gasped with relief.
Liz! Oh, heaven, I thought maybe he... Oh, no.
Hidden from the doors, Elizabeth was lying between the benches, and she was very still. Her clothing, her hair were white with frost. Her face was white and pinched, and her eyes were closed. Clifford crawled to her side, tried to lift her, but her coat, stiff as a board, was frozen fast to the floor.
No good. Have to get some help.
He tried the telephone, but the dial wouldn't turn. The instrument was frozen solid. He staggered from the laboratory, raced down the passage into my study, and dialed 999. Some hours later, in the quiet of a hospital ward, Clifford, McLaren, and myself stood at the bedside of a white-faced, shaken, but still living Elizabeth, waiting till she could tell us her story.
Hi, Liz.
Yes, sir.
You should have stayed for that other coffee. How are you feeling?
Cold. Still very cold. Sorry to be such a nuisance, Doctor.
Oh, my dear child.
I shouldn't have gone back.
Well, you weren't to know. Now, don't talk if you don't want to, my dear.
I do want to, but...
Well, can you tell us what happened?
It was so cold. Ice was just going on everything. I knew I had to telephone. I tried to remember the coffee bar number. Did I?
Sure you did. You got through. When I arrived up there, the whole darn place was turning into a glacier.
But before that, Miss Ryder, how did it begin? Why did you want to telephone? Why did you not just come out?
I don't know. I was leaving when it started. I remember seeing my own shadow on the wall. Then the noise. That awful noise. I couldn't think. Because of the other sound.
What other sounds?
Strange sounds. I couldn't understand them.
Elizabeth, try to remember.
I can't. My mind wouldn't work.
Elizabeth, what other sounds did you hear? You must tell me.
Like voices, quiet, gentle voices, whispering. I tried to understand them. They wanted to be understood, and I knew I could if only. But it was so cold.
Go on, go on.
I wanted to go nearer, to hear them better.
Nearer? To the cubicle?
Yes. They wanted me to. And I was talking. I remember now I kept on talking.
Yes.
I don't know what I said. I couldn't take my eyes off the rod. That green light. I wanted to be close to it. To be warm.
And then? Oh, Elizabeth, stay awake.
Sorry. Then, I suddenly felt frightened.
Yes?
I knew I mustn't. I had to keep the voices out of my head. I just kept on thinking of the telephone. I thought, if I can just get to the telephone. It should have been black, but it had turned white. It hurt my hands.
Yes.
And then, oh, why can't they make this room warm?
He would leave her alone. Yes, I can now. Thank you, my dear. Have a good rest. You've more than earned it. I think we should go now.
So long, Liz. The doctor says you should be fit enough to come out tomorrow.
Thanks, Kev. I keep on getting rescued by you. I mustn't let it become a habit.
She's almost asleep. Come along.
We went back to the college, to the laboratory. The ice had all disappeared, but the place looked as if a flood had swept through it. It was late. We were all exhausted. There seemed nothing more we could do. We stood there aimlessly, helplessly, while the water dripped dismally around us.
Well, I don't know.
Voices whispering, wanting to be understood. Doctor, was she just a bit light-headed, or did she really hear something?
Yes, Clifford, I believe she did. That was why she stayed. She had to.
Heyward, are you telling us that that object spoke? That a voice came from it?
Not a voice, but something that was able to reach her mind, that wanted to communicate with it.
Aye, and the signals reaching the telescope. Again, an attempt at communication.
Exactly.
It must fit together two forms, perhaps, of the same thing.
Hey, Doctor, look at this.
What is it?
The tape recorder. It's running.
And the tape half used.
It switched to record. It wasn't operating when I bust in here, but it is now.
And the microphone is still connected. Clifford, you said Elizabeth fell about here.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, suppose she stumbled against it, pressed her hand down on it.
And switched it on. It would have started recording.
Yes. It's gone on until the cold froze the motor to a standstill.
And it's only just thawed and started up again. Clifford, take the tape off. I have a recorder at home. We can try it there. This place is still uncomfortably chilly. And before we go, make quite certain the cubicle is properly secured. After this, no one is to be alone in here, not for 1 minute.
I've got the tape laced up, sir.
Let's hear it, then. Though I doubt if it picked up much under those conditions.
Here she goes, then.
Nothing.
Oh, it has to warm up. Ah, listen.
Hey, that's it. The rod going flat out. She did start it, Gorsh.
Seen it so often. Phone number on the menus. Think.
She was trying to get me at the coffee bar. I was sitting down there feeling so sorry for myself. If I'd have known what you were.
Cliff, please come. Please. I can't fight it much longer. Yes. Cliff, help me. I mustn't go back.
Drop the receiver.
Yes. Now, those vital 4 minutes before you got to the laboratory. If we can hear what happened in that time, though we must.
Hey, listen to that. I've never made that noise before.
Now she's walking towards it, getting near the cubicle.
Who are you? Yes, I can hear, but you are so far away. I will try to understand. The cylinders come from your world. Many were lost on the journey, but many have landed safely. Yes, we are in no danger. No danger. You intend us no harm. Yes. The cylinders are your way of exploring our planet, which you believe may be inhabited. Yes. They collect samples, solids, and gases. Transmit them back for analysis. Yes. In this way, you are surveying our world without leaving your own. To you, space and time are not impassable barriers.
Hey, what? Do you hear? This is wait.
Now you are trying to communicate with us directly. Yes. If we are intelligent beings, we are to answer. Yes. Yes, we do understand. But how are we to answer? It is so cold. Yes, I am trying. Yes, there may be another way. We are not to be afraid if you take the next step. If you use the rods to... What?
Oh. And that's all we shall hear, I suppose. That was when the recorder finally froze up and stopped. It's a wonder it kept going as long as it did.
Well, Hayward, you were right. Voices from the 10th planet.
Yes. An inhabited planet, Campbell. Though by what inconceivable form of life?
Aye, what?
So that is the purpose of the cylinders. What incredible technology. No clumsy rockets, no feeble attempts to land on a planet where conditions might be dangerous to them. No. First, a systematic, remote-controlled survey. 50 years. By now they must have built up a complete knowledge of the Earth's composition. Its geology, its atmosphere, its lands, its oceans. And we fondly imagine that we are far advanced in science.
Well, at least one weight's off our minds. They're not hostile.
No.
They're still only seeking knowledge. Thank heaven there's no danger after all.
No, no danger. They seem anxious to reassure us on that.
Obviously they have no way of coming here, even if they wanted to. That distance, it's out of the question.
That may be just as well. What manner of creatures can exist there? A frozen planet 100 times the size of Earth, 5,000 million miles away. It could be no biochemical life as we understand it.
Yeah, but what's that they said? Time and space are not impassable barriers. They said that.
Quite so.
Well, you must act on this as you think best. I must get back. I've been too long away from the telescope already. When I left, young Garrick was working like a maniac.
On the signals, you mean?
Yes. He's pretty sure the breakthrough isn't far off now.
Well, we must know if they're part of the same project. We can suppose now that they are. But it's strange that they were not mentioned in the message that Elizabeth understood.
Aye, that's odd. But once we can find the basic key to those transmissions, we'll know.
And I must see Lord Heatherton again tomorrow. He must hear this recording. Perhaps there is no real urgency now if one keeps a safe distance from the cylinders, but all the same...
Just one thing on my mind, sir.
What's that?
We didn't get the end of that message. The tape stopped too soon.
It did.
Liz did, but she can't remember.
No.
We were not to be afraid if they used the rods to take the next step. Now, that's what gets me. What else could they be used for? What next step?
The next day was sunny, and I felt easier in my mind than I had for a long while. But a shadowy doubt still lurked. We had made a momentous discovery. We seemed at last to have reached the truth. Then, why did I feel that the pieces had dropped into place too conveniently? Was there still something we had overlooked? I was just leaving for Whitehall when Tom Lambert arrived. He had been busy since I last saw him, and he wasted no time. He slapped a thick sheaf of papers on my desk. The neat teleprinter type, page after page of it, told a disturbing story.
There's the first installment, Doctor, straight off the wires. They're coming in thick and fast. The Ministry teamed up with the Foreign Office. They've got every foreign news service working overtime.
And these are all accounts of the same kind of phenomena?
Yeah, dug out of newspaper files all over the known world. And like ours, they go back for 50 years and more.
Now, let's have a look. Yes, everywhere. Australia, Alaska, Norway, South America.
Yeah.
Even one from the Philippines.
And in every case, the same symptoms. Earth tremors, vibration, violent drops in temperature. In a few places, the things were seen to land.
Where there?
A streak of blue-white light. A quick concussion and... and then just a small hole in the ground.
Well, they would arrive white hot after passing through the atmosphere.
In many cases, they were assumed to be meteorites. But they go down so deep, they're impossible to dig out.
Well, they must strike the earth at tremendous speed.
I say.
The one we found under that beach must somehow have been slowed down, perhaps through colliding with a real meteor shower.
Hmm.
And how many of these are there?
Well, so far, 208.
208?
And the reports are still coming in.
Oh, the minister must see these too. Distributed over the entire surface of the globe. So many. Just for a survey.
What was that, Doctor?
Oh, I was just thinking aloud.
Oh.
Well, thank you, Mr. Lambert. By the way, we've come to the conclusion that there's no serious danger from these things.
Oh?
Provided they're kept at a respectful distance.
Well, let's hope you're right, Doctor, because I've got a news flash, too. Our South Wales correspondent tells me that troops have moved in.
Moved in where?
Llanwethlyn.
Good heavens.
Yeah, they're mounting a guard on the old pit. Seems the official view is a little less confident than yours.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, I must be going. I'll pass on anything I can.
Well, thanks, Doctor. I'll be around. I have a small theory of my own. I think we may be comparing notes again before long.
Half an hour later, I was again in that quiet high room behind Whitehall. Lord Heatherton's face was more serious than it had been before. He listened to the tape recording and examined the bundle of reports.
Well, this is really only what we expected, isn't it, Doctor? Except bigger. Over 200 cylinders.
So many and so evenly distributed.
No country, no corner of the world overlooked. Rather like some enormous spy system. As you say, why should they need so many? And that recording. We are dealing with something quite outside our knowledge. But if their intentions really are peaceful... is there any way we can reply?
Well, according to Professor McCarran, none at present. Mm. In time, a signaling apparatus might be built, and it might be powerful enough to send short waves to the 10th planet.
A lot of mites, Doctor.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Anyway, I'll tell you what we are doing about this. Plotting every suspected site in this country, guarding each one we confirm with an army unit.
Yes, I heard.
The public must be protected. Our delegate is addressing the United Nations Scientific Commission today. Then I hope the same will happen abroad. Detecting, plotting, and observation of sites. And here in this red folder is another scheme I've drawn up.
Oh, yeah.
I can't tell you the details yet, but they are also being put before the commission.
What sort of scheme?
Just certain emergency measures, should they for any reason become necessary.
Yes, but I do.
I know what you are going to say. This is knowledge, vital knowledge. We must be on our guard against any instinctive hostility, I agree. But better safe than sorry, Doctor.
I see. But what do we do immediately?
A famous politician once said a famous saying, wait and see. Carry on with your work for another week. If no new developments occur, then I shall arrange for several other cylinders to be excavated.
And then?
Already there are some high-level proposals. An international authority to decide how best to develop this interplanetary contact. Research centers will be needed, an international fund, coordination.
Yes, of course. Another week. Then it'll be out of my hands.
Not entirely. There will be work as part of a team for all the specialists we have. Your lecturing on cosmic science will be valuable.
My lecturing?
This is a big event in the history of our small world, Doctor. We must be big enough, each in our own way, to meet it.
Yes, I understand.
Now perhaps you will excuse me. I have rather a lot to do. I have to report to Parliament this afternoon, but I rather think all the honorable members will stay awake to listen to me today.
Outside, Whitehall was gray and cold. The sun had gone. A steady drizzle was falling. The cars and buses elbowed each other. The passers-by huddled into their coats and went on their million and one different errands. Everything was as it should be on a dismal November London afternoon. So solid, so normal. What, I found myself saying, can possibly change any of this? The few slabs of colored plastic we were making such a to-do about? It suddenly seemed absurd. Oh, how little we knew then. I drove back to the college. I went up to the laboratory and stood looking at the rod, dark and silent in the cubicle. Would we ever know? And anyway, in a few days it would be taken away. I hardly heard the doors open behind me.
You think you might see her? Hello, Doctor.
Well, Doctor. Elizabeth, Clifford. Oh, I was daydreaming. How are you, my dear?
Quite all right, Mother.
Good.
They let me out this morning. Cliff told me about the recording I seem to have made. I still don't remember. He didn't want me to come here again, but I wanted to see that. It told me something, more than was on the tape, and I repeated it. But it's gone.
Well, it may come back to you. In any case, our work's nearly over. Special authorities, international funds, will be no place for us. Oh, well, it had to happen. What I can possibly do in 1 week.
I could try again. I think I can send it.
No, I won't hear of it. You've done your share, Elizabeth. Another time, that terrible freezing, you might not be so lucky. Now we can only wait.
The next morning, Saturday, the newspapers exploded. Theories, speculations, accusations, advice. Plenty of advice. The story had broken at last. By 11, my house was besieged by reporters. Every reporter in London, it seemed, except Tom Lambert. My front doorbell and telephone rang furiously, until I disconnected them both. I saw no one all day, and I spoke to no one. I slept badly that night. I kept hearing the sound of the cylinder. And once, I think it was 3 a.m, I got up and rang the college. But the disgruntled voice of Simmons assured me that all was quiet in the laboratory. The next day was the same. Now the tireless gentleman of the press resorted to the door knocker. I couldn't do much about that. Then 3 solid policemen appeared outside and peace returned. Late in the afternoon, Clifford and Elizabeth called. I was glad to see them and asked them to stay for dinner. It was a silent meal. The wind seemed very strong outside, rattling the windows behind the curtains and scurrying round the deserted square. We were not to know it then, but elsewhere the night was even wilder. Far away, a bitter gale was lashing the Isle of Scala and howling through the girders of the radio telescope high above Kirkwood.
You're sure about this?
You can't have made a mistake.
I broke the code this afternoon. Stumbled on it almost by accident. Once I confirmed the 10 basic groups, the rest just fell into place. I got this clear transcription from the first long sequence I tried.
But it's English.
Oh, it is now. But it could be any language. The signals don't convey a letter alphabet. They're a series of numerical progressions representing shades of meaning. A sort of mathematical grammar.
And this is what you've translated so far?
I'll work through the rest as fast as I can.
This is enough. Goodness gracious, Peter. If this is true, I must talk to Petrie. He must know about this at once.
We were sitting round the fire when the telephone rang. At first we ignored it. But it wouldn't stop. At last I asked Clifford to answer it.
Yes, he's here. Hold on, will you? Doctor, it's Professor McLaren calling from Scarra.
Oh, I wouldn't like his phone bill. Hello, Campbell.
Hayward?
Yes.
Hayward, Garrick has broken the signal code.
What? When?
A few hours ago. He's translated a passage. I've got the paper here.
What? What does it say?
I'd better read it. It's short enough. Are you listening?
Yes, yes.
If the cylinders speak, do not believe what they say. Your planet is in great danger. Destroy them.
Good.
That's repeated three times. Then, when the great cold comes, it will be too late.
The great cold? Is that all?
Aye. Garrick's at work on the rest. I'll be down tomorrow, Hayward. I'll get a plane.
Good.
Let's hope it isn't as bad as I think it is.
Yes. Well, thank you, Campbell. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, did you hear that, Clifford? If the cylinders speak, do not believe them.
Then all that about peaceful intentions and seeking knowledge.
Well, it's to throw us off our guard, to save the cylinders. Perhaps so that... Oh, what a monumental idiot I've been. The 10th planet, in some way, it must be divided. That's why signals have been coming from two directions. And if the cylinders transmit matter... Well, of course. We must go to the laboratory. There's no knowing how much time we have.
Nothing. The rod is still up.
I was half expecting quiet now. It's only waiting. Don't you see, either of you? This marvel of creation we've come close to worshipping, it can beam matter across space. We've known that for weeks, but we've been blind. If it can transmit in one direction, it can do it in the other. From Earth to the 10th orbit, or...
From there to here.
Precisely.
But what would they need to send through?
Oh, themselves. Whatever they are, themselves. You've heard their voices. Next time, we shall see them.
But the next step, we were not to be afraid. We were to wait to help them.
Doctor, look. The rod. It's starting to flicker.
Oh.
The green light. It's beginning. It must be. And the cold. Can you feel it?
Well, we must choose now. Knowledge or survival. Clifford,
yeah?
The builders left the sledgehammer in the passage. Get it. Get it, I say.
Okay.
What are you going to do?
Do what primitive man did when he saw danger. Fight.
Here it is.
Some hammer. Must weigh 30 pounds.
Elizabeth, open the cabinet.
Open.
Do as I say, quickly.
All right.
Now, tip the rod over. Pull it. It won't hurt you yet. I'll help you.
All right.
Right. There it is, Clifford. Now, use those Canadian muscles of yours. Smash it.
Yeah, but we can't just...
Smash it, I tell you. If you won't, I shall have to.
Okay.
Stand back. Here it goes, then. It won't break.
Harder. Harder. All your strength, Clifford. It must break. It must.
Oh.
Oh, hopeless. Won't even ship.
The ice! Look! The ice! It's coming!
It's no good. They knew it would come to this. They planned. They made sure. Nothing can destroy this thing. Nothing!
That was Orbit 10.
Now, from the makers of Cold Water Omo,
in the missile redeployment department, Mrs. Peel sat reading the book marked Commission Report, Read, Digest, and Pass On. She'd been reading away for some hours with great interest. In the passage outside, Martha, the char lady, whispered to Bromfield.
She's in there. The girl I saw at Bell Chambers Perfume Shop. She's on to us.
Mm.
But she's been reading the book.
Then she's solving the problem for us. Is the door locked?
Oh, yes. I locked it from the outside.
Let me out! Let me out of here!
Now leave this to me. I shall be the first person she sees.
Who locked me in there? How dare you? What are you... What are you... Oh.
Hello, my dear. I've come to take you away. Will you come with me?
Oh, yes. Yes. Of course I'll follow you anywhere.
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers. Episode 6, the final episode of this story, in which John Steed and Emma Peel decide that physical attraction is too basic, that mental affinity is unsatisfying, and that the only thing to do is... love all. There had been dirty work at the Department of Missile Redeployment, largely due to a man known as Bromfield and his charming accomplice, Martha. Martha, disguised as a char lady, had been working her charms on the senior staff and managed to glean many top secrets from the top men. She'd also persuaded them to cover their tracks by confusing unwanted investigators. One of the investigators, Mrs. Peel, had succumbed to Bromfield's treatment and was now under his spell. The other investigator, John Steed, had been attacked in his apartment by Fryer, another top man who'd been told to kill by Martha. Steed hadn't had a great deal of difficulty with Fryer. He'd merely disarmed him and knocked him out by throwing him across the room. It was at that point that the telephone rang.
John Steed?
Mother here. Helen Steed, why don't you report?
Oh, hello, Mother. Sorry, a bit of difficulty. Just had a man from the ministry drop in on me.
Oh? Hot news?
No, he's out cold at the moment. It's all extremely odd. Mrs. Peel seems to be right. Something's happened to people's glands. This fellow Fryer burst in here a short while ago and accused me of pinching his lady friend.
Literally?
Figuratively, but I suppose it's much the same thing. Anyway, I think we're on to the root cause of the trouble. I'll report in the morning.
Good. Time to breakfast. Eggs, bacon, champagne, nothing like it.
It's a date.
Oh, and bring Mrs. Peel, if you wouldn't mind her.
She's not at the ministry?
No, I've just rung them. She's disappeared. Bye, Steve.
The plot, as they say, or as Rosemary Z. Glade would say, thickens considerably.
Where am I?
Well, that's hardly an original thing to say when coming round. You're in my apartment.
Your apartment? What am I doing here?
Recovering from a tiny little accident. You tried to kill me.
What? What? Oh, my head.
Now, don't try and move yet. Oh. Just lie there and recover. You had a nasty fall.
You say I tried to kill you? Now, why should I want to do that?
Well, I was hoping that you'd tell me that. Try and remember what happened immediately before you came here.
I can't. I can't. It's all a blank. I remember reading a book.
A book? Reading a book? Ah, yes. One of the novels of Rosemary Z. Glade, perhaps?
No, I never read novels. It was official. A book at the ministry. The sort of book one reads, digests, and passes on.
Book? Ah, yes. The book.
Steed crossed to the table and picked up the volume he'd taken from the printing room at Casanova, Inc.
Got to go now, Mr. Fryer. Stay until you feel better. Bye.
In the offices of Casanova, Inc., Bromfield and Martha stood looking at Mrs. Peel, who was sitting in an easy chair with a dazed expression on her face. She smiled up at Bromfield adoringly.
What are we going to do with her?
You're with Mrs. Peel, Martha. Why nothing?
Nothing?
Nothing at all. You see, it won't be necessary. She'll do anything for me. And to my dear.
Oh, yes. Yes, anything.
You see, she loves me. Don't you, Mrs. Peel?
Oh, yes.
She loves me to death, in fact. Open the window, Martha.
What?
Do as I say. Open the window.
Oh, very well.
Now, Mrs. Peel, my dear, give me your hand. That's right. Now come along and have a good look at the view. There we are. Beautiful, isn't it? Isn't it beautiful, darling?
Yes. Yes, it's beautiful.
And beautiful things should be enjoyed to the full. So I want you to step out onto the window ledge and take a closer look.
Yes. Yes, all right.
Then I shall ask you to do something else. Come along. That's it.
What must I do?
The reason for asking you to do this is that I can never see you again.
Oh, no.
It's true. So there's no point in continuing to live, is there?
No. No, there's no point.
Now take your time. But you can't come back in here, so off you go then.
Leaving Mrs. Peel literally teetering on the ledge outside the wide window, Bromfield returned to Martha and the large map of England, which was spread out on the desk.
Now, Martha, are you sure Fryer's information was correct?
There's no reason to doubt its accuracy. He was just as thoroughly hooked as the rest.
Mm. How did it feel to have the whole of the ministry in love with you?
I can take it or leave it. They were all so boring.
Did it make you feel proud to have so many worshippers?
Not that I knew they couldn't help themselves.
Never underestimate the power of the written word. Look at this book. It looks so large at home, uninteresting and requiring a great deal of concentration. Those poor fools will never know what hit them.
Oh, darling, no one is as clever as you are. You can make anybody do anything.
Hmm. Only with this to aid me.
Bromfield opened the book, revealing a tiny mechanism in the back cover.
This little gadget, those little microdots, an unbeatable combination, subliminal indoctrination. They read the words, but this message is between the lines. I must say you've done well, Martha.
Is there anything else you want me to find out?
No. Now here on this map is marked the new security system in full. It's all complete. We fulfilled our promise.
And when do we get the money?
As soon as we deliver this information. Where's Athene?
Athene?
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Bromfield. I'm right here.
Let's start getting the stuff out of here right away.
Yes, sir. You leave everything to me. I'll see to it all. Right.
What about her outside the window?
Oh, she's just waiting for the final order to jump. All right, Mrs. Peel. I'm going now. When I say jump, my dear, be a good girl and jump. Right. Jump!
John Steed, heading for Casanova, Inc., had parked his car and was walking down the road when he looked up and saw the strange sight of Emma Peel on the window ledge. He got himself into the building in double quick time and headed for the offices. Martha and Bromfield left by one door as Steed belted into the room by the other. Tearing across the room, he seized Mrs. Peel by the belt of her costume and jerked her back into the room.
come back in here. What the devil do you think you're doing? Is this a publicity stunt or something?
I have nothing left to live for. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to me. He has left me.
Who? Oh, Bromfield?
Of course.
You're in love with him?
Desperately.
Infatuated? Or indoctrinated? You know, the trouble with you, Mrs. Peel, is you read too much.
And the trouble with you, Steed, is you interfere too much.
John Steed dived at Bromfield's legs and the shot went wide. Steed struggled with him on the ground, grabbed him by the hair and crashed his skull against a metal filing cabinet.
How dare you? How dare you lay hands on him?
Hey, I'm on your side, remember?
Let go! Let me go, you brute!
If I do, will you stop this nonsense?
No, I'll scratch your eyes out!
Very well, then, on your own head, be it.
Oh.
Steve grabbed his bowler, which had come off in the struggle, and bopped Mrs. Peel smartly over the head.
I know love is blind, but this is ridiculous.
Steed placed Mrs. Peel in a comfortable chair and set about examining the pile of books in the corner. He found the mechanical device in the cover and, holding it up to a mirror, examined it through a powerful magnifying glass. He managed to read,
"You will fall in love with the next person you see." Well, if one of these little mechanisms works on a person reading a book, I wonder what effect half a dozen of them will do.
Steed. Steed, my dear boy, congratulations. So, Bromfield and the woman are in custody, and you cleared the whole matter up as usual. Brilliant, dear fellow. You're brilliant.
Oh, isn't he? Isn't he just too wonderful, Mother?
He is. Extraordinarily talented, charming man.
Oh, thank you, Mother. Thank you, Mrs. Peel.
Oh, Steed, I do love you.
And so you should, Mrs. Peel. How you've managed to cultivate such charm, Steed, such panache.
Well, I thought it such a waste that Bromfield's invention should be thrown away. I had a few of the gadgets made into coat buttons, you see. Two on my suit, four on my waistcoat. A bit flashy, but effective. Take a good look, Mrs. Peel.
Oh, Steed. Steed. You are beautiful.
Much more effective than Midsummer Night's Dream. Shakespeare brought up to date, in fact. Give me your hands if we be friends, and Mother shall restore amends. Open the other bottle of champagne, will you, Mrs. Peel?
The Avengers. Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers, brought to you by the makers of Cold Water Omo.
Presents The Adventures of Ellery Queen. Tonight, the makers of Bromo Seltzer bring you another thrilling adventure with Ellery Queen, the celebrated gentleman detective in person. Ellery Queen invites you to match wits with him as he relates another story of a crime he alone unraveled. Before revealing the solution, he stops the play, gives you a chance to solve the mystery. Our guest armchair detectives for this evening are Miss Sonia Bigman, contributing editor of Time magazine, and Edward Pauley, who plays Steve Wilson on the famous radio program Big Town. And now, Ellery Queen, master detective, and your host for the next half hour.
Thank you, Ernest Chappell, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight's case will really test your mettle as an armchair detective, because I can assure you it had us thinking hard. It's about a man who could disappear almost at will. I call it The Adventure of a Vanishing Magician.
Mamie! Mamie Dover! What's the matter?
Oh, there you are, Mr. Forsythe.
Oh, dear, my dinner will be ruined if that husband of mine doesn't get home soon. You'd think after 20 years of married life, a man would get to know this ferry was yet dry.
You were crying, Mamie, and it wasn't about Hal or the spare ribs.
Now, you go back in the parlor, Forsythe, and read your Variety and Billboard, while I see if I can't save my dinner.
You were crying about the house, weren't you, Mamie?
Yes.
Well, we haven't lost the old shack yet, Mamie. Now, stop crying. Think of the good old days.
Of the good old days. What for? We'll never see him again.
Oh, don't you believe it. Waterville's coming back. Yes, sir. Before you know it, you'll be right back in the old five-a-day again. Hal and Mamie Dover, songs and patter.
Maybe Vaudeville's coming back, Forsythe, but Hal and me won't come back with it. Nor you, nor Avanti. The great Avanti, magician supreme. Gilbert Forsythe, quick change artist, how it goes. Stuff, passe. They'd laugh us off.
Yeah? Well, I'm as good as I ever was. I've kept in practice, Mame. I haven't let the hinges on my theatrical trunk upstairs get rusty. No, sir. Remember that quick change act I had? Riley of the New York Finest? Where I played all seven parts? Why, it laid him in the aisle.
It was corny, Forsythe. Hal and me were corny. Avanti and his magic was corny. We're through, and you know it.
Through, am I? I'll show you all, and especially that sarcastic Booker who threw me out of his office yesterday.
Oh, what's the use? You knew we were through when you, Avanti, Hal, and me pooled our savings 13 years ago to buy this house.
Yeah, you're right, Mame. We thought we'd have at least a roof over our heads. Now...
Oh, there's the front door. Hal?
Hey, Mame.
Hal, I thought you'd never get home.
Oh. Oh, evening, Forsythe.
Hal, did you see that pagan at the bank?
I saw him.
What'd he say, Hal?
He busted a gut laughing.
Oh, Hal.
So we lose the house, is that it?
Next week, unless the U.S. Marines save us in the nick of time.
But, Hal, what'll we all do? Where'll we go?
Search me. Oh, Mame, stop crying.
Huh? Dover, I told you we did wrong when we mortgaged that house 5 years ago.
And what were we supposed to eat, Forsythe? Your 1929 billboard clippings?
Hal, Dover, I'll have you know.
Yeah.
Well, now, next week is next week. Right now, we have a dinner to eat. Though heaven knows, Hal Dover, you've done your darndest to spoil it. Now, sit down, both of you.
I ain't hungry, Mame.
You're going to eat, mister, and we're not going to wait for the great Avanti. I'll have the ribs out in the jiffy if they ain't dry as dust.
I guess I'm jumpy, Forsythe.
Yeah, it's my fault, Hal. It's losing the house and all the money we put into it.
Going back to a furnished room. Avanti?
Hello, Mamie. Hal, Forsythe. Where are you, my friend?
In the dining room, Avanti.
Ah, I am late, you know? A long, long face. No luck today, Hal.
Sit down and eat your soup, Avanti.
Avanti?
Yes.
Oh, it's about time. Now, hurry with your soup.
Attention. The great Avanti is about to give a performance.
What's he so gay about?
Cut the clowning, Avanti. I ain't in the mood.
No? Then I shall put you in the mood. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if I may have your attention, please. Observe. There is nothing up my sleeve.
Cut it out, I said.
Now, Hal.
Hell's on it, Avanti.
Oh, who wouldn't be losing the house?
And who says we are losing the house, huh?
The bank that's holding the mortgage, you punchy dope.
Avanti says it is not so.
What?
Your faces light up, eh? My friends, I have it all fixed.
Avanti, we won't lose our house.
No, Mamie. And what is more, we shall have enough dough to last us a long, long time.
You're crazy with the cold.
That's something crooked. No. It is not something crooked, Forsythe.
But, Avanti, you ain't serious. How can you save the house?
Follow my instructions and have faith.
What do we have to do, Avanti?
Nearly, when the proper time comes to get out of the house for one evening, leaving it unoccupied. That is all.
What are you going to do, burn it down?
Even that wouldn't do any good. Our fire insurance lapsed.
Now, you two stop. Avanti?
Yes?
You want us to leave the house for one evening and that'll save it?
Yes, Mamie.
I suppose you'll do it by magic, Avanti.
Yes, Mr. Dover. By magic.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the beginning of our mystery. We'll be back in just a moment to tell you more. But first, Ernest Chappell.
I heard tell the other day about a lady who paid her first visit to New York just recently. That was plenty exciting for her, all right. Even though the bright lights aren't quite as bright as usual, there was plenty to see and do.
Plenty? I'll say so. I never saw so many people or places at one time in my life. And the crowd.
Yes, indeed, the crowd. Well, after a few days of helter-skelter running around, the lady woke up in her hotel room one morning feeling like this.
Oh, my head.
Yes, a common thick headache. Not unusual when you're on the move more than you're used to being. But was she going to let that stand in the way of seeing all there was left to see in New York?
Not on your life. I had headaches in my own hometown, too. And if Bromo Seltzer could make me feel so much better back home, I guess it would work just as well in New York.
So she up and went down to the drugstore, had the clerk mix her a Bromo Seltzer at the fountain, and...
And pretty soon I felt like my old self again. So I went on to see Grant's tomb and the Statue of Liberty just as I'd planned.
Good for you. And good for Bromo Seltzer. You'll find it's handy to have around, friends. So get a big blue bottle of Bromo Seltzer tomorrow. And now back to our story. It's two mornings later, the scene, Inspector Queen's office at police headquarters.
There's the maestro and Miss Porter, Inspector.
Hi, Petey. Come in, you two.
A hurry call to headquarters. That means a case.
Is it a case, Inspector?
It's a case, Nicky, but best if I know what kind. Henry, shake hands with Mr. Avanti, Mr. Steer. My son, Henry, Secretary, Miss Porter.
How do you do?
This really isn't a matter for the police, son.
The inspector and me thought it was a lot more on your line, maestro. Screwball stuff.
Sounds interesting, Sergeant.
First, I'd better explain, son, that Mr. Steele here is a very wealthy businessman with a peculiar hobby.
I thought I recognized you, Mr. Steele. I have read an article about you in a magazine recently with your photograph.
That's me, Miss Porter.
Your hobby's collecting magic tricks, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. I'm an amateur expert in magic. Know more about magic than these fellows know themselves. Hey, Avanti?
Mr. Steele, you are the boogeyman of my unfortunate profession.
Mr. Steele's a shower-upper, maestro. These guys make up magic tricks. He figures them out.
I see.
So yes, Mr. Steele's had a standing offer of $25,000 to any professional magician who can show him a magic trick he can't solve in 24 hours.
Wonderful. You're sort of a magic detective, Mr. Steele.
Yep.
Yes, sir. The best of them have tried to collect that $25,000. No one's collected it yet.
Mr. Steele has seen through every magic illusion ever invented, Ellery.
Mr. Steele will not see through mine.
You see, Avanti's taken up Mr. Steele's challenge.
He claims he can pull a trick that'll fool even Mr. Steele.
Oh, swell. What's your illusion, Mr. Avanti?
I shall disappear in thin air.
Oh.
But that's not new, Mr. Avanti. Houdini made an elephant disappear in full view of a theater audience.
I saw the old master do it myself.
All disappearance illusions are done with mirrors and apparatus. You won't fool me with one of those moth-eaten tricks, Avanti.
But, Mr. Steele, I do not use mirrors or apparatus.
Huh? Well, Avanti, I'll hold you to that. No apparatus, Mr. Avanti? Well, but may I ask why you've come to the police?
It's going to be a case for the Missing Persons Bureau, ain't it?
Oh, I wish Mr. Steele to be completely satisfied about the conditions under which my illusion takes place.
You see, Ellery, Avanti and some old-time Vaudeville friends of his jointly own a two-story brownstone in Chelsea that's in danger of foreclosure.
It's one of them old babies, maestro, and a solid block of attached houses, all alike.
All alike.
And Mr. Avanti wants to win Mr. Steele's money to save the house? Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Steele, but from now on, I'm on Mr. Avanti's side.
The more the merrier, Miss Porter. Disappear into thin air without mirrors or apparatus?
No.
Mr. Avanti, just how do you intend using the house in this magic illusion of yours?
Ah. First, Mr. Queen, I wish the house to be examined from basement to roof, inside and out. To satisfy Mr. Steele that there are no sliding panels, hidden passages, tunnels, or secret hiding places anywhere inside.
There goes my solution.
Secondly, Inspector Queen may station police as guards at each exit from the house to see that I do not escape. As many men as you please, Inspector. On the roof, in the basement, the backyard, at the doors and windows. In fact, I shall be insulted if you do not put a veritable human cordon around the house.
You're making it impossible for yourself, Avanti.
Ah, that is the essence of the illusion. Finally, I shall enter, alone, in full view of all of you. And you will not find me in the house when you look. I shall have vanished. And then, Mr. Steele, you have 24 hours to solve the problem of my disappearance, or pay me $25,000.
You're crazy, Avanti, but by George, you're on. When'll you be ready?
Tonight.
Well, you gentlemen will have to count me out. I can't touch it. No crime involved.
Inspector, please make an exception.
Excuse us a moment, gentlemen.
Yes,
very well.
Cooperate now, with Avanti.
But I've no authority, son, a thing like
oh,
this.
Oh, you can find the authority, Inspector. It means so much to Mr. Evans.
Well, the guy's a nutter, a publicity hound.
He's neither. He's doing it for that little group of ex-5 Adairs, Sergeant. They need that $25,000 to save their house.
That's all very true.
Be a sport, Dad. Play along with the vent here. It's a favor to me.
Well, what'll the big jinx say? And he talks 3 languages.
Inspector, please.
Well, blast it. All right.
Thanks, Dad. Mr. Avante. Mr. Steele.
Okay,
I ought to have my head examined, but... Okay, gentlemen.
Oh, good.
Fine. Avante, get ready to disappear from that house of yours. Tonight at 9.
Think
Avanti's
going to be able to pull this off, Hal?
I don't know, Mame. I'm hoping.
That man Steele must be as crazy as Avanti. Without apparatus, impossible.
Why, when I headed the bill at the New York Palace back in 27...
Yes, yes, we know for sight. You laid them in the aisle, that. Ah, Mame smile. The house is as good as ours again.
Oh, Avanti, please don't miss.
Avanti, good luck.
Avanti, I'm not against you. It's just that, well, people get so darn bitter.
I understand. And I will not fail you.
Come on, you people. You're not supposed to be here, Mr. and Mrs. Dover, Miss Forsythe.
Now, according to the agreement, you folks wait in that corner cafeteria till this is over.
And don't worry, Mrs. Dover. I have a hunch Mr. Vandy's really going to do it. Oh, I hope so, Miss Porter. Come on, Hal.
Okay,
and Mr. Forsythe, we'll get
some coffee. Avanti will bring the bacon to the house. Now, are you gentlemen all satisfied?
Yes, Mr. Vandy.
And where is Mr. Steele?
Here I am. Are you ready, Avanti?
If you are, Mr. Steele.
Hold it a minute. Vinny.
Yeah, Inspector.
Hurry up before the reporters get wind of this.
Everything set, Sergeant.
Yes, sir, my throne.
Mr. Steele, are you satisfied that there are no secret passageways or hiding places in the house?
Well, it's true. I searched it myself.
Okay, Mr. Steele. I had a department expert look the house over from top to bottom. He says there's no way out of the house except through the regular doors and windows and the roof and cellar.
I'll testify to that, Mr. Steele. I look myself.
Is the house completely empty now, Sergeant?
Well, no. I met one cockroach in there. He kissed me. He was so glad to see somebody.
That was good for a laugh, but Tony passed it. Come on, Billy. How about police details?
Okay, Inspector. The whole place is surrounded. I've even got 8 cops on the roof watching the roof door. Don't worry, Inspector. He won't get out.
Okay, Billy. Mr. Vandy, go to it.
I shall, Inspector. Now, you gentlemen will please allow me exactly 2 hours inside the house. At the stroke of 11, enter. Ha, ha, ha. And try to find him.
Vinny, escort Avanti up this stoop and see that he enters the house.
Up to daisy, magician. Front of your faith.
Best of luck, Mr. Avanti.
And I hope we'll not be seeing you.
Hey, you'll see him, Miss Porter. Don't worry.
In you go, Avanti.
Arrivederci. Until later.
Watch closely, Mr. Steele. We don't want you saying afterwards he didn't go in.
I'm satisfied.
He went in. Keep that back of yours against the front door up there, Sergeant.
You'll have to ooze out of a crack to get by me, Maestro.
Well, now for a 2-hour wait. Might as well sit down here beside me on this bottom step, Mr. Steele.
We'll place you, my dear. If Avanti gets out of this house now, he is a magician.
Be exciting. All I've got out of it so far is a bad case of yawns.
Isn't the time nearly up, Henry?
Yes, Dad. 1 minute to 11. 2 hours. You'd need 2 centuries.
Don't laugh yet, Mr. Steele. Oh, here's Sergeant Vealey back.
Vealey, shake a leg up this stoop. What do the men report?
You've made the rounds of the police on guard, Sergeant?
Yeah, Mr. Steele. They all say the same thing. The Vandy didn't come out.
How about the roof, Dad?
You men up there in the roof.
Yes, Inspector.
Everything under control up there, officer?
Vinny ain't coming out of the house this way, Inspector,
hey,
boss.
Hey,
Inspector, when you
start
over with time for the
exact...
It's exactly 11 o'clock. Let's go in and see.
Yes, let's get it over with. Well, open the door,
Vinny. Okay.
Wait, Sergeant. I see it now, by George. The tricky devil. Simple as ABC, too.
What simple as ABC, Mr. Steele?
Look, Queen, Avanti built up the psychology of his audience. In this case, us. By making us wait out here for 2 whole hours. Of course he's still in there. But he's hiding in the hall somewhere and he's waiting for us to come in.
So that we'll impatiently rush upstairs?
Exactly. Then he'll simply sneak out of the house through this front door we'll have left unguarded.
Of course, that may be Avanti's plan, Mr. Steele, but somehow...
Well, it won't work. Amy, stay on guard at this front door while we go in.
Huh?
Don't move a step from this door.
Is that what I get after waiting 2 hours? Okay.
Ellery, for goodness sake, open that door.
Here we go.
Avanti! I don't see him hitting the foyer down here. No place for him to hide.
It's awfully quiet, isn't it? Mr. Avanti! Well, Inspector, where did Ellery and Mr. Steele go? Don't tell me they disappeared, too.
They're searching the downstairs rooms, Nicky.
Here I am, there. He's not down here. Oh, Mr. Steele, any luck?
No, he must be upstairs.
Avanti, come down out of there.
Let's go upstairs, too.
Right, Dad.
He's really disappeared. It's the most marvelous thing I ever heard of. Oh, Mr. Steele, what...
He's not in that bedroom. Avanti! Queen, try that room.
Right, Steele. Well, that's empty. I'll try this one. Looks like a study. And this
not
one either.
There.
Dad, did you look at the stairs leading to the roof trap door?
Not hiding there, Harry. Well, Mr. Steele, it looks as if...
No. There's one door we missed. This one.
Oh, yes. That's the door to Avanti's own room.
And this is where he is. Game's up, Avanti. We've caught you. Confounded Avanti, open this door and stop making a ridiculous fool of yourself.
You might try the door, Mr. Steele. It may not be locked, you know.
No, it isn't.
He isn't here. This is the last room.
But it's not possible. Wait. That clothes closet. He's hiding in this clothes closet.
It's empty.
By thunder, he did it.
But he can't have.
Mr. Steele, you might be interested in this note I just found on Avanti's bed.
A note?
Let me see it too, Ellery.
What did the little whiz write, then?
Gentlemen, you may search this house until doomsday, but you will not find me for the simple reason that I am not here. Mr. Steele, you have 24 hours to figure out how I vanished into thin air, or failing, pay me $25,000.
Kind. The great Avanti.
Listen, Mr. Steele, how many times do I have to tell you? Avanti didn't sneak past me at the front door.
But he did it some way. He got out some way.
Oh. This is getting monotonous.
You still have 5 minutes of your 24 hours left, Mr. Steele.
He didn't get out. He's still in the house.
Where, Mr. Steele? You practically picked the house to pieces in the past 23 hours and 55 minutes.
Inspector, you're sure the police are still on guard outside? They mustn't leave their post yet. Do you hear me?
I don't know why I take this from you, Mr. Steele. But my men haven't left their post since they came on duty last night.
Then where is he? I can't understand it. Not a single clue. Not one.
I disagree, Mr. Steele.
You what, Queen?
It's really a very simple problem.
Don't tell me. Maestro.
Yes, Sergeant. I know how Avanti did it.
Queen, tell me how. Quick, before my time's up.
Ellery, Queen, don't you dare. He's supposed to figure it out for himself.
You heard the voice of the people, Mr. Steele.
I'll give you $5,000 if you'll tell me how Avanti performed this trick, Queen.
Chinhorn.
Make it 10, Mr. Queen. 10,000.
You're a chiseler, Mr. Steele.
Sergeant, open the front door. We'll wait for Avanti on the stoop.
Well, please.
I'll make it 15, Queen. Hurry. Mr. Steele, I'm beginning to dislike you.
You want to chisel these people out of their home. When you've lost a bet, you yourself made.
It's not that. It's my reputation.
Time's up. He's lost.
Oh.
Yes, you've lost, Mr. Steele. Our four ex-Oatville friends have won.
I want to say,
and
my
here
friend.
Comes the great Avanti strolling up the street.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the mystery. While you try to puzzle out just how Avanti disappeared, suppose we see how our guests are making out. Nikki, will you introduce our guest armchair detectives for this evening, please?
All right, Ellery. Our first guest tonight is Miss Sonia Bigman, contributing editor for theater and radio on one of the nation's most important and widely read publications, Time Magazine. Miss Bigman is an avid mystery story fan, and as such, we heartily welcome her as guest armchair detective tonight. Our second guest is a man who, like yourself, Ellery, is tough on criminals. He's Edward Pauley, who plays the part of Steve Wilson on the famous radio program Big Town. Big Town is the inside story of a big metropolitan newspaper, the Illustrated Press. Each Tuesday evening, Steve Wilson, as managing editor, with the beautiful Lorelei and ace photographer Dusty Miller, give radio one of its most exciting programs. Ellery?
Thank you, Nikki. Miss Bigman, how do you think the great Avanti disappeared?
Well,
I can only think because I'm not guessing it at all. The only spot that I can tie up this thing is when Mr. and Mrs. Forsythe or Hal and Mamie Dover were talking about the great advantage. They said he had once played all 7 cards in something called Rally of the New York Finest.
Mm-hmm.
I think he probably got himself dressed up as a policeman and walked in and out all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Without being seen. Well, he just joined the cop or something like that. The only other thing is, the only other clue might be that all the houses look alike.
Thank you, Miss Bigman. And now, Mr. Pauley, how do you think the great Avanti disappeared?
Well, Ellery, a managing editor, isn't a detective. Not much good without his staff. Now, if I could have Lorelei and Dusty Miller and Fletch to help me out, I sound like an expert. Well, I'll just have to take the flyer and say that I'll string along with Miss Bigman on their solution. Matter of fact, I actually have some mental notes here, and that direction I follow pretty closely what you in other words, my mind goes back to the fact that there was a quick change artist involved, and I think that, like a lot of the actual function of these disappearing tricks is that it happens before we actually think it.
Thank you, Mr. Pauley and Miss Bigman. We're going to tell you the correct solution to tonight's mystery in a moment. But first, Ernest Chappell has a most important word to say to you.
Friends, before you crumple a piece of paper to toss it into the fire, wait half a second and think about this. Waste paper is mighty valuable. America's paper mills need every scrap in order to produce enough new paper and paper board to make the containers and cartons that are so essential. Now, you'll be doing your country a real service if, instead of burning waste paper or otherwise disposing of it, you sell it to junk dealers, donate it to charitable organizations, or hold it for your local salvage committee. Consult your newspaper for dates of collection. We've got to get our mills back to full production so they can make the cartons for food, the containers for shells, the bomb fins, camouflage paper, dozens of other vital products needed to win the war.
All right, Mr. Steele. Cough up.
Avanti, here's my check for $25,000. And I still can't believe you did it.
My friends and I thank you, Mr. Steele.
But you've got to tell me how you did it. I've just paid a lot of money for not knowing.
Yes, I think we ought to tell, Mr. Steele, eh, Mr. Avanti?
You've solved my illusion, Mr. Queen.
Oh, he always solved everything, Mr. Avanti. Ellery, please.
I tell you, if you don't, I won't sleep tonight.
All right, Lily. Well, our magician went into the house. 2 hours later, we searched it, and he was gone. Vanished, as he claimed, in thin air. Yet the reports from the policeman on guard at every exit from the house were that Mr. Avanti had not left.
But he did leave, Ellery. That's a fact.
Yes, sir. Consequently, when your policeman said he hadn't left, they only thought he hadn't. He had.
You mean Mr. Avanti got out of the house under the eyes of grown policemen without their knowing it?
It's the only possible explanation, Nicky.
But how?
Well, what was the situation? A house surrounded by police, men in uniform, a couple of dozen of them. Take the roof. 8 uniformed police on guard. Let's consider those 8 policemen. Each officer, wherever he turned, saw another officer, another blue coat. The police uniform is a great leveler of personality. And besides, Mr. Avanti cleverly set the time of the illusion at night when visibility is poor. Because the roof held the largest congregation of police, I say Mr. Avanti got away by the roof, disguised in a police uniform.
Oh, sure. What a fool. What a fool.
Confirmation? Yes. Mr. Avanti asked for 2 hours, when obviously a few minutes would have sufficed. Why did he ask for 2 hours? Because he's a student of human nature, like all magicians. He knew that in 2 hours, the watching police would be bored, that their vigilance would relax, that they'd start trudging around the roof to keep warm, smoking, chattering, milling about. So that Avanti, watching from inside the roof trap door, merely had to wait for a single instant when none of the 8 pairs of eyes was on the roof door, and in that instant, slipped noiselessly out onto the roof in a policeman's uniform. And there he was, on the roof at night, just another officer of the law.
Sorry,
he might have done the same thing, not this guy. But he knew he'd never be able to get off the roof once he slipped out of the trap door without being spotted. Dressed as a policeman, however, all he had to do from that moment on was saunter quietly about among the 8 real policemen, minding his own business, until he saw a chance to slip on to an adjoining roof. Remember, this is an attached house, and make his escape from some house farther down the street.
He may just make the trick possible by insisting on a big police guard.
But where did Mr. Avanti get the policeman's uniform, Ellen?
There is even a clue to that. We've all been told that Mr. Forsythe, the quick change artist, lives in the house and his old theatrical trunk is in his room. And what was the sketch Forsythe used to do in the glamour days of vaudeville? He used to play all seven parts in a skit called Riley of the New York Finest. So in Forsythe's trunk, there must have been a New York policeman's uniform. Mr. Avanti, I should like to shake the hand of an artist.
No, no, Mr. Queen. The honor is mine. Believe me, Mr. Queen, I am so happy it wasn't you I challenged to solve my illusion of the vanishing magician.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to the mystery. I want to thank Miss Bigman and Mr. Pauley for appearing as guest armchair detectives this evening. We want especially to compliment both of them for their skill in solving the crime. We have for both Miss Bigman and Mr. Pauley a personal gift from Bromo Seltzer, also an autographed copy of my latest mystery anthology, The Female of the Species, and a subscription to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine.
Hang on now, friends, because Ellery will be right back to tell you about next week's mystery. Meanwhile, you can grab a seat aboard the one and only talking train. Here we go. All aboard.
Fight, headache, three ways.
Yes, that's the right track to quick, effective relief from common sick headache. Bromo Seltzer. You see, Bromo Seltzer fights headache not one, but three ways.
Bromo Seltzer quickly helps relieve that pain in your head.
Bromo Seltzer quickly helps settle upset stomach.
Bromo Seltzer quickly helps calm jumpy nerves.
Now, you can take Bromo Seltzer while it's fizzing or after it settles down. Use it only as directed on the label. For frequent or persistent headaches, see your doctor. But when it comes to common sick headaches, take a tip from our educated train.
Fight headache three ways.
And now, Ellery, suppose you tell us about next week's case.
Sure, Cat. Sure, Chappie. Well, ladies and gentlemen, next week, a young lady offers me $5,000 to get back the stolen sum of $3. I can't tell you more. I tell you too much. So I'll just caution you to get your thinking caps all shined up next Saturday for the adventure of a $3 robbery.
Music for the Adventures of Ellery Queen is by Charles Paul.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.